Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network.
In the future, none of you are heroes.
You're legends.
Get driven, stay driven.
Welcome back to the Bareback Facts, everybody, and today we're going to be talking about the legend of Kamazots. And for those of you unfamiliar with Mayan mythology, this will be a refreshing experience for you, I think. Kamazots is, to a degree, a minor deity within the Mayan mythology, but he is one of many deities, and specifically, he is a deity associated with a few things. First off, he's associated most often with bats, but also with bloodletting, human sacrifice, death, and corn. That's right. Corn and blood sacrifice, they go together. They're like peas and cornbread. But, or I should say beans and cornbread. But now, that's neither here nor there. Kamazots is particularly significant because he, within the Mayan mythology, despite being a minor deity, he is a primary antagonist to the Maya hero twins, Unahompu, and, of course, his brother, Xibalanq. Now, Xibalanq and Unahompu are famous Mayan semi-gods. They're like basically half-god, half-human. And their story is narrated in the Book of Council, the Popol Vuh, which is the sacred text of the Quiché Maya of the Guatemalan Highlands, and it was written specifically around the early colonial period, though the stories within it are said to be much, much older and have been clearly reinterpreted and passed down from generation to generation. Now, these two are the second set of hero twins within Maya mythology, and within Maya mythology, like Mesoamerican cultures, the Maya believed in a cyclical time, including periodic cosmic destruction and renovation called the Ages of the World. Now, the first pair of divine hero twins were the Maize twins, one hunter, Hun Hanapu, and seven hunter, Vokub Hanopu. And they lived during the Second World. One hunter and his brother Seven Hunter were invited down into the Mayan underworld Xibalba to play the Mesoamerican ball game. For those of you unfamiliar with Mesoamerican ball games, they featured a number of players whose sole purpose was to knock a very hard, round ball, sometimes a stone, through a big stone hoop that was elevated. Now, this sport was pretty brutal. These guys would use their bodies essentially as wrecking balls, and they played human pinball together, attempting to drive this ball through the hoop. Now, the unfortunate thing is that, unfortunately, they were not very good sports, in that if you lost this game, you became a human sacrifice. So it was within your best interest to win this game. This was a well-known practice among the Maya, and it's no wonder that it featured prominently in their mythology. Now, this popular game led to and the participation by these two heroes led to these individuals being invited to Xibalba to play this game by these Xibalban lords, One and Seven Death. There they fell prey to multiple trickeries. And on the eve of the scheduled game, they were given cigars and torches and told to keep them lit all night without consuming them. They failed in the test, and the penalty for their failure was death. They were then sacrificed and buried, but the head of Hun Hanapu was cut off, and only his body was buried with his younger brother. Now, why is this significant? Because the lords of Xibalba were playing for the souls of men, which now meant that men would no longer have as long of lives as they could have had. So essentially, is the reason that men will eventually end up in the underworld. Now, the Lords of Xibalba placed the head of Hunahanpu in the fork of a tree where it helped the tree eventually bear fruit. And the eventually, however, the daughter of one of the Lords of Xibalba, one of the Lords of the Underworld, named Zikwik, which means Blood Moon, came to see the tree, and Hunahanpu's head talked to her and spit saliva into her hand, thus impregnating her, and 9 months later, the second hero twins are born. This is significant because they are the two that are going to run into our lovely friend. Now, in the third world, the next pair of hero twins go by Hanahoku and Xibalank. They avenge the first set of hero twins by defeating the Lords of the Underworld. Now, the second set of the hero twins has been translated as Xibalank, Jaguar Son or Jaguar Deer, and Hunahpu as One Blow Gunner. Now, when One Blow Gunner and Jaguar Son are born, they are treated cruelly by their brothers, but make themselves happy by going out every day to hunt birds with their blowguns. After many adventures, they are summoned to the underworld, because of course they are, because their fame is, it's growing. This is what happens when you become a hero. You get summoned to the underworld. Don't become a hero. That's the lesson for today. Following in the footsteps of their fathers, they descend the road to the Xibalba, but they avoid the tricks that captured their fathers. When they are given a torch and cigars to keep alight, they trick the lords by passing off a macaw's tail as the glow of the torch and by putting fireflies at the tips of their cigars. These Xibalbans, who first try to play with a ball made of a skull covered with crushed bone, and an extended game follows full of trickery on both sides, but the twins survive. However, it is later that in the Popolvuh, the Mayan sacred book, that the two hero twins, at some point on their journey, end up in a place called Zotsaliha. And Zotsaliha, cavern within the underworld of Xibalba, known as the House of Bats, a place, a realm said to be shrouded in darkness for all time. And within it, hungry spirits, demonic armies, and a vast, innumerable horde of bats. And at the very depths of this great cavern sits the god Kamazats, whose name has been translated in multiple translations as either Death Bat or Snatch Bat. But nonetheless, Zotsaliha was home to Kamazat, who is one of the monsters that is said to have decapitated father of the second set of twins, Hunahanpu. Now, it is said that when the original twins had wandered into the underworld and their torch went out, they mistakenly wandered into Zotsaliha. Now, Zotsaliha Kamalkan is a different god, the god of fire, and not to be confused with Zotsaliha the Hall. Kamazats waited in the darkness for these two unsuspecting heroes to wander into his midst, and when they did, he let out a terrifying screech, flew out of the shadows and snatched Hunahanpu's head off. Now, Kamazats' name has been conflated with another name, the name of a demon named Kamalats, or sudden blood letter, clearly being conflated with this, and he is identified as one of four animal demons which slew the impious first race of men. Now, within the Mayan mythos, there were many different ages of existence. And in the earlier ages of existence, men were arrogant. Men thought they knew all the secrets of the universe. They rose to great heights, but they dishonored the gods. And as punishment, the gods, the way, They turned their sight away from mortal men, and the demons and monsters of the underworld were able to rise without the power of human sacrifice and obedience to the gods. Time could not move as it should, and the demons and monsters of the underworld were able to rise and claim men as their own. And amongst these demons were animal demons, animalistic beings like Kamazots, whose sole purpose was to feast on the flesh of mortals. But Kamazots is not only terrifying because he feasts on the flesh of mortal men, because he does not simply feed on the flesh of mortals, for it is said that those caught outside on the dark, moonless nights might run afoul of Kamazots, and he will devour them both body, blood, and soul. Now, there are many stories of Kamazots, despite him being rather obscure, considered to be more on the obscure side as far as the more popular gods within the Mayan mythos go. Now, in the Latin American region, it seems that the ancient belief in the death bat survives even to the present day. Several cultures have traditions of bat demons or winged monsters. There are legends of the Hikal, or black man, that still circulate among the Tzotzil people of the Chiapas area of Mexico. The Hikal is sometimes referred to as neck cutter. Other bat demons include the Sucuyant of Trinidad and the Quintin of Ecuador. Yet similar creatures appear in the folklore of rural Peru and Chile. The Chanchan is a vampire-type monster, and it is truly bizarre, even for a legendary creature. It is said that after a person's death, the head will sometimes sprout enormous ears and lift off from the shoulders. This flying head is the Chanchan. Its sound, as recorded by one individual named Jorge Luis Borges, was much like the sound described by the Popol Vuh of Kamazots' dreaded screech. Now, most archaeologists seem to indicate that the monster Kamazots' legend itself was based on the common vampire bat, Desmodus rotundus, a bat traditionally associated with bloodletting and sacrifice. Others suspect is the false vampire bat, Vampirium spectrum, due to its large size and habit of attacking prey. Now, when we look at the myths of Kamazots, most of the time they talk about his nose being the shape of a flintlock. But here's what's particularly terrifying about Kamazots. For Kamazots is not simply a bat, for he is both, but he has human features as well. For he walks on 2 feet like a man, but can fly with his massive wings. Now, Kamazots is said to be the king of the night sky. And in Mayan mythology, the bat itself takes on a very special meaning in relation to the underworld, Xibalba. Many superstitious Mayans would notice that the furry bats would spring right up from under the ground at night. And they believed that because below the ground bats roosted deep in dark and extensive underground caves connected to the wells that Mayans tended to throw their human sacrifices down, they believed that bats themselves came from the underworld, and it only stood to reason that the king of all bats, Kamazots himself, would too also come from Xibalba. The Mayan god of night, death, and sacrifice had the head and wings of a gigantic, bloodthirsty bat with razor-sharp fangs, and his name was Kamazots. Kamazots is the master of twilight and the darkest nights. He utterly terrified the Mayans, and in every story that he shows up in within the Popol Vuh, the Mayan, which is the Mayan holy book, for those of you just tuning in, his reputation for being a hellraiser is confirmed. The god himself looked only vaguely human in appearance in that he stood upright on 2 feet, when he wasn't flying, had 2 arms, but in one of his hands, he carried a sharp knife designed for peeling the skin off of mortals. And in his other hand, he held a sacrificial victim, prepared to say goodbye to the world of the living. It is thought Hamazats himself took delight in tormenting human sacrifices. And it wasn't, and what makes Hamazats so particularly terrifying in and of himself is not simply that he represented human sacrifice and bloodletting, but that Hamazats was said to drink the very blood of mortal human beings from the underworld as well. And in addition to that, Hamazats was not only a predator of men, he was a predator of gods as well. According to Mayan stories, in the earliest days of human existence, Hamazats lived comfortably in the underworld and had vast armies of demons of every description to fight against and cause immense trouble for the gods with. Themselves needed human blood to keep on fighting, and so they demanded human sacrifices from the people upon the earth. Now, human blood served best as sacrifice, for it was the most precious gift that humans could give. Any human being could give an animal, but the gods desired the best. They needed the most precious of sacrifices, and only human blood could sate their desire and their need, could instill in them the nutrients and strength that they needed to combat Hamazats and the other lords of the underworld and to combat these massive demonic forces. Now, human blood was said to charge the gods and give them the strength they needed to annihilate Hamazats' millions of demonic beings and minions in his employ. The Mayans were respectful of the gods and did what they were asked to do, but after a while, seeing so many being offered up to the gods takes its toll. And it is said that in stories, the Mayans eventually could not bring themselves to sacrifice people any longer. Unable to do anything about this and unable to reach beyond their realm into the realm of mortals and interfere, the gods basically turned their backs on mortals. And when they did, Shibalba opened up into the mortal plane. And Hamazats was able to spring free of the underworld itself. Shibalba and the mortal realm became one, and a passage between the realm of the dead and the realm of the living opened. And along with Hamazats came all the maladies of the underworld, all the demonic forces, legions of demons and lesser bat creatures, much like Hamazats himself, sprang from Shibalba, and they tore men asunder, devouring their flesh and ripping down all the things that men had created. Before long, the age of men passed, and every man, woman, and child would be drained of their vitality, and there was naught but dry, dead bones, stacked for all the world to see, as far as the eye could see. Hamazats and his armies had laid waste to the first Mayans. He had devoured them all. And still, he and his legions were hungry. Hamazats, with a full belly and nothing left to kill, gathered his minions and returned to his blood-soaked cavern deep within the dark reaches of Shibalba. And the gods sealed, they assessed nothing but utter destruction, complete and utter desecration of all that they had created at the hands of Hamazats and his hordes of hungry demons. And in response to this, they attempted to create the world anew, hoping to create a civilization of people who would be loyal to the gods, who would keep true to their faith and covenant, with the gods, who would help them restore the balance between good and evil, who would aid them in their struggle against the forces of darkness. We're going to take a short break, guys. And when we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit more about the myth of Xibalba and the myth of Kamisatz and why Xibalba is so vastly different from other forms of the afterlife we might be familiar with. But I'm also going to talk a little bit more about Kamisatz and why Kamisatz is such an awe-inspiring and terrifying figure to behold. This particular legend of Kamisatz destroying the first men is fascinating in and of itself, but it's what comes after the destruction that we really, really want to get into. So before we go to break, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that we have a proud new sponsor of Totally Driven Entertainment. He's funny, he's wacky, and he's crazy, and he's totally driven. So check out ChrisFraleyPresents.com. Guys, when we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit more specifically about Xibalba, and then we'll return to talking more about Kamisatz and his role within Mayan mythology as it pertains to the relationship between mortals and their covenant with the gods.
I'm Black Man, saving man's eyes, one stereotype at a time.
To the Blackmobile. To the corner of Martin Luther King Street and Malcolm X Boulevard, pronto.
Will Black Man make it to the crime on time? Or will he be on CPT? Stay tuned at ChrisFraleyPresents.com.
Attention business owners, website owners, event promoters, or anyone looking to promote your product. The Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network is the perfect way to spread the word of your business around the world. That's right, you can advertise at our network and be played on all of our shows at rates that are so cheap, it's a no-brainer. For more information, contact Bay Ragney at bayragney@gmail.com. To keep your business driven, stay driven with Totally Driven Entertainment.
Are you a fan of Sherlock Holmes? Letters from Holmes offers unique, one-of-a-kind letters from the world-famous detective himself. Handwritten on 8.5-inch by 11-inch aged parchment paper and using smudge-free ink to produce original, high-quality letters that fans will treasure for years to come. Each letter is handcrafted and written from the perspective of Sherlock Holmes, mimicking Holmes's native tongue and embracing many of the famous detective's quirks, quips, insults, and peculiarities. Order a love letter, birthday greeting, personal correspondence, or more only at www.etsy.com/shop/lettersfromholmes.
For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long ways. But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin on the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. Be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in southern Chester County out to save your child's life. Come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause, www.caseyscause.com.
Looking for that perfect gift for your ghoul friend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to TeddyScares.com. And be sure to become our friends at Facebook.com/TeddyScares.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well, then visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215-288-7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our Wacky Stores page on Facebook.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Hope you guys enjoyed listening to the sponsors. Now, I've told you guys, we talked a little bit about Kamazotz and his role in ending the first age of men in Mayan mythology, his role as a god that represented death and sacrifice and bloodletting, and how he and his horde of demonic beings rushed out from the underworld, Xibalba, and devoured men. The first age ended at his hands and his fangs. But now I'm going to talk a little bit about Xibalba itself and what that place is, what it means. So what is Xibalba? Xibalba roughly translates from Mayan as a place of fear. It is the name of the underworld in the K'iche' Maya mythology, ruled by the Maya death gods and their helpers. Now, in 16th century Verapaz, the entrance of Xibalba was traditionally held to be a cave in the vicinity of a region in Guatemala known as Coban. Many caves have also been referred to as entrances to Xibalba because they're dark, but in some Mayan areas, the Milky Way, it has been viewed as the road to Xibalba. So it just depends on who you're asking and when. But Xibalba is described in the Popol Vuh as a court below the surface of the earth associated with death and with 12 gods or powerful rulers known as the Lords of Xibalba. The first among the Maya death gods ruling the Xibalba were Hun Kamay, one death, seven deaths. Now, though Hun Kamay is the senior of the two, both of them share a great deal of power as Lords of Xibalba. The remaining 10 lords are often referred to as demons and are given commission and domain over various forms of human suffering to cause sickness, starvation, fear, destitution, pain, and ultimately death. These lords all work in pairs. Now we have Zikurathak, Flying Scarab, the Flying Scab, Kukamink, Kukamakwik, Gathered Blood, who sickens people's blood. They work together. Then you have Ahaltul, the Pus Demon, and Ahalgana, Jaundice Demon, who caused people's bodies to swell up. Yeah, these guys are really cheerful. Then we have Kamiabiak, Bone Staff, and Kamiaholam, the Skull Staff. These individuals turn dead bodies into skeletons. Then we have Ahalmez, Sweeping Demon, and Ahaltokop, Stabbing Demon. They are two demons who hide in the unswept areas of people's houses and then stab them to death. So all the more reason to do your spring cleaning, people. Beware of the stabbing demon known as Ahaltokop. If you don't sweep your house, Ahaltokop will jump out and stab you to death. So sweep your floors. So if you're trying to get your kids to sweep the floor, just remember the Mayans have got you covered. They've got a god specifically dedicated to stabbing people to death for not cleaning their houses. These people are not playing around when it comes to cleaning. I'm so glad my parents never told me that story as a child. I think I would have been scarred for life. Then we have G, which is Wing, and Patan, backstrap. These two cause people to die, coughing up blood while walking out on the road. Again, you know, one of those situations where, you know, you got a useful, don't, you know, stay out of the street, or these two demons will come out and make you cough up blood till you die. The remaining residents of Xibalba are thought to have fallen under the dominion of one of these lords, going about the face of the earth to carry out their listed duties. Now, Xibalba was a large place, and a number of individual structures or locations within Xibalba are described or mentioned in the Popol Vuh. Chief among these was the council place of the lords, the five or six houses that served as the first tests of Xibalba. We mentioned some of these tests already, and the Xibalban Ball Court, which, of course, the hero twins go to. Now, also mention of the homes of lords, gardens, and other structures indicating that Xibalba was at least a great city, despite being filled with terrifying demons. Now, Xibalba seems to be rife with tests, trials, and traps for anyone who comes into it. Even the roads to Xibalba are filled with obstacles. First, a river filled with scorpions, a river filled with blood, and then a river filled with pus. Beyond these was a crossroads where travelers had to choose from among four roads that spoke in an attempt to confuse and beguile travelers. One would come upon the Xibalba Council Place, where it was expected visitors would greet the seated lords. Yeah, be thankful you don't have to go through this frickin' maze that when you die, right? As if, you know, life wasn't complicated enough. Now you got to go through all this. I'd be pretty peeved. Following greeting the seated lords, realistic mannequins were thought to be seated near the lords to confuse and humiliate people who greeted them. It's not bad enough you had to travel through rivers of scorpions, blood, and pus, and talking roads. Now you got to deal with being humiliated by the very lords that you came to meet. And then the confused would then be invited to sit upon a bench, which was actually a hot cooking stove. The lords of Xibalba would entertain themselves by humiliating people in this fashion before sending them into one of Xibalba's deadly tests. The city was home to at least six deadly houses filled with trials for visitors. The first was Dark House, a house that was completely dark inside. The second was Rattling House, or a cold house full of bone-chilling cold and rattling hail. The third was Jaguar House, which was a home filled entirely with hungry jaguars. The fourth was Zotolohala, the bat house filled with dangerous shrieking bats. And of course was Razor House, which was a house filled with blades and razors that moved about on their own accord, shredding those unfortunate souls unlucky enough to be chosen for that particular task. Now, in another part of the Popol Vuh, a sixth test, the hot house filled with fires and heat, is also identified. Now, the purpose of these tests was either to kill or humiliate people placed into them if they could not outwit the test. Now, Xibalba was the home of a famous ball court in which the heroes of the Popol Vuh succumbed to the trickery of the demons there in the form of a deadly bladed ball, as well as the site in which the Maya hero twins outwitted the gods and brought about their downfall. Now, these are different from the gods of the heavens, as these gods of the underworld, the lords of death themselves, were manipulating the afterlife so that poor, unfortunate souls who had died before would have to go through these tests to reach the afterlife and find rest last. It wasn't bad enough that they had traveled through life and made it through life's challenges, hopefully completing the race and making it to the afterlife. These poor, unfortunate souls would then be trapped in Xibalba and forced to not only prostrate themselves and humiliate themselves before the lords of Xibalba, the lords of death, but they would also be forced to undergo these grueling tests. And, of course, run the risk of dying a second death. Or, in some cases, multiple excruciatingly painful deaths in the afterlife, depending on how long it took them to get through each test. Now, according to the Popol Vuh, the Xibalbans at one point enjoyed the worship of people on the surface of the earth who offered human sacrifice to the gods of death. Over the span of time covered in the Popol Vuh, the Xibalbans are tricked into accepting counterfeit sacrifices and then finally humiliating into accepting lesser sacrifices from above. Now, this is thought by many to be a slander on earlier forms of Mayan worship, but nonetheless, the Xibalbans and the role of Xibalba after their great defeat at the hands of the hero twins is rather unclear, though it seems to have continued its existence as a dark place of the underworld long after. So Xibalba doesn't disappear even after these gods are outwitted and beaten. Xibalba does not go away. Xibalba is not the only description of the underworld that we have from the Maya. The Yucatec, choked up there. The Yucatec Maya had an underworld known as Metnal, which is a place of fire rather than a place of fright. Now, unfortunately for those who were sent, those who ended up in Xibalba, there was not much of a chance of escaping the place. Ideas such as leading a good life or and avoiding eternal torment by not doing bad things were not part of the Maya belief system, and as those as only those who died a violent death would truly avoid Xibalba. The underworld was a truly fearsome place, strongly associated with water, and it had its own landscape, gods, and bloodthirsty predators, all who sought to prowl and prey on those who died. Now, for the Maya, Xibalba lay to the far west, hence the great number of burials made on the islands of Campeche, located off the west coast of the Yucatan Peninsula, and making it the most western Mayan territory. Xibalba was entered through a cave or area of still water in the Tlaltecatl, which was the surface of the earth and the first of the nine underworld levels. The Milky Way was also considered an entrance to Xibalba, as I previously mentioned, and a road along which souls walked to meet their fate. Now, the Maya, believing the underworld had nine different levels, represented this idea in the gigantic stone pyramids they built as tombs for their kings, which often have nine tiers. The Maya believed that the underworld was ruled by a group of gods, as I mentioned before, known as the Lords of Xibalba, or the Lords of Death. And many of these lords could occasionally come up to the world of living where they would spread misery, disease, and chaos. The Maya believed that each astronomical god had its own manifestation in the underworld as well. And the most important book, the Popol Vuh, describes the geography that I've been talking about Xibalba, which is this is the key text of Mayan mythology that we have, by the way. So it's very fortunate that it survived so long. Level of Xibalba, many trials and dangers had to be faced by the dead. These included the crossing of the dangerous waters, high mountains, rivers of blood, attack by spinning obsidian knives and daggers, arrows, even the sacrifice of one's own heart. To help the soul survive such an ordeal, the dead were buried or cremated with useful pieces of equipment, such as weapons, tools, weaving kits, precious goods like jade, sustaining foods such as hot chocolate, and even dogs, real or pottery effigies to act as companions or guides. It was believed that by burying the dead with these tools, it would help their people survive again in the afterlife, because life is not without its challenges, and why should the afterlife be any different? Now, the Maya expected to undergo trials in Xibalba, and if they could use their skills and intelligence, then they had a chance to outwit the terrible demons and trials awaiting them there. The story of the two heroes I mentioned earlier is a story of hope. It shows that these tests can be overcome, they can be beaten. But it's important to note that even though they manage to beat the test, they don't escape death. Something I forgot to mention earlier in the show is that the Lords of Death, the Lords of Xibalba, despite being defeated the second time around by the second incarnation of the heroic twins, still managed to win out in the end because the heroic twins still get executed. Now, I mentioned that they played a ball game. They played a game of ball. And this game they won, but it did them no good, as they are executed anyway. Lords of the Underworld had hoped to kill them, but the twins themselves, out of spite, leapt into tremendous fire. But the gods themselves brought them back to life. And in doing so, brought about their doom, as the pair wreaked havoc in Xibalba, slew the lords of the underworld, and even managed to resurrect their father, the Maize God. Now, three, along with a bevy of maidens and laden with treasure, then used a canoe to finally escape from Xibalba and return to the land of the living. Now, many scholars have debated this story, back and forth. Some say that the whole myth is most probably a colorful metaphor for the planting of corn seeds into the earth and their subsequent growth back above the earth's surface. But important to note that the afterlife is a complex for those, for the Mayans. It was much like life, full of challenges. And among those challenges was the dreaded Tamazots, or Tamazots himself, from his hall Zatzalaha, was one of the testers of humanity. In his hall of bats, he awaited those poor souls who were sentenced to be tested in the house of bats. Tamazots was one of the lords of Shibalba, and much like the other lords of Shibalba, he had a task to complete. Now, while some of the lords of Shibalba's task was to go about the earth wreaking havoc, spreading disease, pestilence, and war, Tamazots' task was far more grave than anything they could have devised. For his task was to test the souls of those condemned to the House of Bats. Those poor souls who didn't die violent death, who lived in mediocrity, who lived each day and played it safe, never risking doing too much, never risking standing out in their society. These people lived their everyday life, never really breaking the mold. They patterned their lives after mommy and daddy and wallowed in mediocrity, not knowing that their fate was to be lost in Shibalba and perhaps even sentenced to the House of Bats, where the devourer of blood and human flesh waits with his many children and his army of demons. The one devious and bloodthirsty god, Kamathos, who waited to devour the souls of men once more. Tamazots, who had risen from the underworld and ended humanity once before for their failure to provide sacrifices that pleased the gods, that pleased him. He and his vast horde of demons and bats and monstrosities of every shape, size, and color spread across the known world like a plague and drained humanity dry, leaving nothing behind but dry dust and shattered, crumbling bones. Never before had the world known such fury as the hunger of Tamazots and his armies. They spread across the Mayan kingdom, devouring any poor souls they came across, flesh, blood, and soul, ending an age before being forced, due to being entirely too gorged on human blood, to remain in their unholy abode, awaiting the poor souls of the next age of men, waiting for man to make the same mistake, to fail to please the gods. And while Tamazots functions as a terrifying entity in and of himself, as a tester of human souls, he is also the taster of human flesh. But in some stories, Tamazots does not simply wait to devour the souls and flesh of men. Oh no. He flies from his dark halls and occasionally snatches humans from their mortal plane, dragging them screaming into the House of Bats to be
his evening meal. And not content simply with the blood of mortals, Kamazats is known in many stories to even prey upon the other gods themselves, draining them of their blood and marrow, dragging them screaming into the house of Bat Solatzal. What then can we take from this story of Kamazats? What then can we learn from the legend of the hero twins and their attempts to outwit the lords of death? For even though they somehow managed to outwit death, they still had to be resurrected again. And they were only resurrected because the lords of death allowed it to continue the cycle of life and death, rebirth and rejuvenation. But what else can this tell us? What else can a story like the legend of Kamazats tell us? Well, certainly it can function as a source for many legends of vampires and blood-sucking entities that have passed around the region of Mesoamerica, Central America, and what would now be Central and South America today, Mexico and the Yucatan Peninsula. But Kamazats and the Lords of Xibalba tell us more about the Mayan culture than they do about more modern stories of vampirism and vampires. Kamazats himself is said to rise from the very holes that Mayans sacrifice their victims in. So Kamazats himself is even fueled by the very sacrifices that are said to keep him at bay. It speaks to something, the human spirit, something that we all know to be true but grapple with on a daily basis, something we're afraid sometimes to say out loud but know to be true. And that is that some things are inevitable and that there is no escape from destiny. We as people want to believe we have agency. We want to believe we've got all this freedom. But at the end of the day, there is a constant that exists. No matter how many variables we throw out there, there is a constant. Kamazats represents that constant. That constant is death. The world has formulated the many manifestations of death. There is not a single culture in the world, not a single religion you can point to that has not attempted in some way to grapple with the concept of death and its perceived finality. But what is so fascinating about Kamazats and the land Xibalba is not that they represent death. It's how they mirror life. You see, we always get caught up on death as this finality. But the Mayans viewed death as a continuation, as part of the great cycle of time and space, always moving cyclically, always moving in cycles. They firmly believed that the afterlife was much like life, and to simply pass into the afterlife was not to simply fade away from existence. And they looked upon these challenges, the many houses that they'd have to try and survive, the many challenges, the tasks that they would have to survive, in quite a different way than we look at our afterlife. More modern constructions of religion, more contemporary constructions of religion, and we could point to specifically, and I wouldn't want to say particularly modern in the case of the example I'm going to use, so I would like to retract the concept of modern, because I don't really like the term modern. I really don't even like the term contemporary. Because when we say this, there's this implication that we certainly mean Western. But this is Western, right? that's a whole other can of worms that we won't get into right now. But when we look at this story of the underworld, this story of Kamazats, this lord of death from the land of the underworld, Shibalba, a place where the dead go to be tested before they can truly find their rest, we have to look at why they're there. Why are they there? What are they doing there? And why do they have to be tested? What is it that keeps them from this rest? What is it that keeps them from finally seeking peace? It's these tests. But why the tests? Why are there tests? The Mayans believed that time was cyclical, that everything moved in cycles, and that everything came back around. They believed, they were fully aware of the challenges that life presented. They lived in a very harsh environment, an environment that was determined upon them being strong. They lived in an environment that forced them to overcome the odds, to create a civilization in a harsh jungle climate with vicious predators and rival tribes and a rival civilization that threatened their very existence. And while their kingdom expanded, while their great kingdom and empire expanded, they still faced the challenges of everyday life. The challenges of providing for one's family, the challenges of moving up in society, the challenges of survival in everyday life. We take for granted the great luxuries we have at our disposal, but these people fought tooth, nail, every single day for their survival. Picture a world in which you actually live in close proximity to hungry jaguars and bloodthirsty caimans, poisonous snakes of every variety, insects that could kill you with a single sting or bite, in a harsh climate such as the dense forested jungle region in which they lived, battling for your life against rival tribes and hoping to the gods that you will not be taken as a sacrifice by a rival tribe or taken as a slave, knowing that every single day you're going to be challenged in this way. Every day you've got to get up and figure out how you're going to survive, how you're going to keep your family alive in this very unforgiving, harsh environment that made men become warriors, that forced men to reach beyond mediocrity and find themselves, find courage in their hearts. The thing that made people tell stories, these people were inspired by the struggles of their own people. They faced those challenges head on. They put duty and survival at the top of their list. Preservation. Tackling their challenges head on. They didn't have the option of running away from their challenges, because running away from your challenges meant starvation, meant death, sickness and death, and possibly enslavement and eventual death as well. But they couldn't stand idle. They couldn't just simply live a normal, everyday, mediocrity-filled life of repetition and never trying to succeed or make something of themselves. Because if they did, there was one thing that awaited them. You see, the afterlife, Shibalba, is not reserved for every single person that's ever existed. Shibalba is the place where souls who did not die violent deaths go. For those who died or suffered in life to a great enough extent, those who died violent deaths or suffered harshly enough in life, they were allowed to pass into the afterlife in peace. But those people who did nothing to better their situation and simply went through the motions every day, those people who didn't take risks and try to find glory in life, those people must be tested. Those people were unworthy of reaching a peaceful afterlife, and therefore they were condemned to the tests of Sheba. They became subject to the whims of the lords of death, who awaited in their shadowy kingdom those poor souls who failed to live life to the fullest, who failed to strive to be better. They accepted their lot in life and never sought to better their situation. They did not pass the test of the gods to reach for the stars and to try and emulate the gods themselves. You see, the first men who had been wiped out by Kamazots and the legions of his monstrosities that came from the hall of Xotzalahar, those individuals who sprang from the depths of Sheba to devour mankind, they became so arrogant they believed they did not need the gods. They became so arrogant they believed they need not subjugate themselves to the whims of gods. And because of this, the gods were unable to defeat Kamazots and his hordes, and they were able to spill into the realm of mortals and devour men. So man must find balance, live life to the fullest. He must not complain when faced with challenges. He must forge ahead and make something of himself. He must embrace life's challenges, even if it leads to his death at the hands of another. The Mayan people believed that those people who strove to be great would not have to face the terrifying challenges of Sheba. Because they had taken up the challenge of the gods. They had faced the challenge head on. They had made an effort. Guys, we're going to take one more commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about Kamazots as he's sort of been later interpreted and his impact on later folklore involving vampires, and then we'll close off the show. Hope you guys are enjoying the show so far. Hope you're learning a lot. I've been looking forward to doing some Mesoamerican stories, and it's such a rich, you know, the Mayan and Aztec cultures are so rich. They have so many stories. There's so much you can pull from these, and I'm really enjoying it, so I hope you guys are enjoying it. When we come back, we'll close up by talking a little bit about the influence of Kamazots on these other regional tales and talk a little bit about some source material, and we'll call it good, guys.
I'm Black Man, saving man's eyes, one stereotype at a time.
To the Black Barbier. To the corner of Martin Luther King Street and Malcolm X Boulevard. Pronto.
Will Black Man make it to the crime on time? Or will he be on CPT? Stay tuned at ChrisFraleyPresents.com.
Attention business owners, website owners, event promoters, or anyone looking to promote your product. The Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network is the perfect way to spread the word of your business around the world. That's right, you can advertise at our network and be played on all of our shows at rates that are so cheap, it's a no-brainer. For more information, contact Bay Ragney at bayragney@gmail.com. To keep your business driven, stay driven with Totally Driven Entertainment.
Are you a fan of Sherlock Holmes? Letters from Holmes offers unique, one-of-a-kind letters from the world-famous detective himself. Handwritten on 8.5-inch by 11-inch aged parchment paper and using smudge-free ink to produce original, high-quality letters that fans will treasure for years to come. Each letter is handcrafted and written from the perspective of Sherlock Holmes, mimicking Holmes's native tongue and embracing many of the famous detective's quirks, quips, insults, and peculiarities. Order a love letter, birthday greeting, personal correspondence, or more only at www.etsy.com/shop letters from homes.
For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long ways. But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin in the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. Be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in Southern Chester County out to save your child's life. Come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause, www.caseyscause.com.
Looking for that perfect gift for your girlfriend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to TeddyScares.com. And be sure to become our friends at Facebook.com/TeddyScares.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well, then visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. Part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215-288-7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our wacky stores page on Facebook.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Thought it'd be good to take a little bit of break, get a little bit of drink in me so you guys don't have to hear me drinking water. It's not very seemly. Now, before the break, I mentioned we were going to talk a little bit about how Kamazot has impacted Folklore Day. Kamazot's story has been passed down quite a bit. I mentioned earlier in the show that the Zatsultan legends of the Hikale, sometimes referred to as a neck cutter, a bat demon who yanks the heads off of men, and this is most likely a reference to Zotsalaha, the Hall of Bats, where Kamazots comes from, and of course the incident in which Kamazots yanks the head off of one of the hero twins. But he's also influenced stories of vampires such as the Chantan, the Tui Tui Tui. Sound that he is said to make is similar to the eeking call that Kamazots supposedly made when springing from the darkness, and it's essentially a squeal that a bat would make. Now again, as I mentioned before, Kamazots' legend is thought to have largely been influenced by the presence of bats or simply vampire bats. Now, one of the most commonly mentioned features of Kamazots is a nose the shape of a flint knife, which could be an exaggerated interpretation of the nose leaf presented by members of leek-nosed bats. Now, the vampire bat, of course, is a relative or a member of this group. Scholars and archaeologists believe that Kamazots and the vampiric legends that abound in his wake are largely influenced by the presence of bats, particularly vampire bats, in this part of the world. Now, there are several other stories supporting the idea of a large bat-like creature that have come out of Latin America, including a species of fossil bat related to vampire bats discovered in 1988, but that was described as being 25% larger. They refer to reports circulating among local natives of large bats which attack cattle and horses, and that these reports suggest that these bats might still live, though these reports are often conflated with the normal attacks by vampire bats on cattle. Now, there's also been reports of large birds that have also said to be perhaps the inspiration for Kamazots. In one report, a report from 1947, a creature presumed to have been a living pterosaur may have in fact been a large
fat, one individual claimed to have seen a gigantic bird with a wingspan of about 12 feet. The bird that they described was supposedly brown, featherless, and beaked. And finally, in the early 50s, people in Brazil claimed to have seen gigantic bats as well. These stories have continued on into this day. They continued well into the 70s. Stories of gigantic bats rumored to prey on human beings have often been associated with this earlier legend of Kamisatz, a story of a being, a bat-like humanoid god who came down, who came from underneath the underworld to claim the blood, flesh, and souls of all mankind. And there you have it, everybody, the legend of Kamisatz. I hope this has been informative, and I hope you guys enjoyed learning a little bit about the Maya and their culture, learning a little bit about a rich history that's sort of been kind of it's kind of taken a back seat in previous years and kind of conflated with talk of aliens and all sorts of nonsense. But I mean, you have to admire the creativity and the creative spirit of these brilliant and these brilliant people. What a rich culture. For those of you guys interested in checking out information on Kamisatz and information on specifically on Maya mythology, you might want to take a look at the Maya by M. D. Coe, Michael D. Coe, published by Thames and Hudson in 2011. It tackles it's been established as the best, most readable introduction to the New World's greatest ancient civilization, and is the result of a lifetime's worth of scholarship on the part of Michael D. Coe, and has recently been published in the 8th edition. It talks a lot about Mayan culture, the history of the civilization itself, and a great deal about their mythology. You might also like Mesoamerican Mythology, printed by the Oxford University Press, and written by K. Almere Reed, been republished in 2002, so you might enjoy that. And you might also enjoy D.M. Jones's The Aztecs and Maya. Another thing to take a look at would be M.E. Miller's An Illustrated Dictionary of the Gods and Symbols of Ancient Mexico and the Maya. And C. Phillips, The Illustrated Encyclopedia of the Aztecs and Maya in Central America, including the Aztecs, with Lorenz Books. You might also enjoy a great article done by Mark Cartwright with Ancient History Encyclopedia on Xibalba, which is a good place to start looking for sources. And it got me started looking at some of these books, and these books, I can tell you right now, are phenomenal reads. Particularly, you will enjoy, I believe, those of you listening, if you're really interested in learning a great deal about an entire culture, I would totally recommend taking a look at M.D. Coe's book. Just really well done, in my opinion. Great, not a hard read to get through. But that's all I've got for you guys today. I hope you guys enjoyed learning about the legend of Kamisatz and Xibalba. I don't see any call-ins. I'm going to let we're going to call it good, guys. I'll catch you guys all on Friday when we talk about Carathonach. Carathonach is said to be the only demon that St. Patrick couldn't cast out of Ireland. So we're going to talk about her. She is said to be the mother of the devil himself. So that's Friday at 5 p.m. Hope you guys will tune in then, and we'll get to it. It's going to be cool. I think I've been looking forward to doing it for a while now. So I hope you guys enjoyed the show. Catch you guys all Friday when we talk about Carathonach. And, of course, you guys catch me every Sunday, 9 a.m., 12 p.m. Eastern time with Straight Football Talk. Catch you all on Friday. Enjoy the rest of your week, guys.